that bad. Now the boat won't float, I don't like it. I'm too proud to be poor. They used to call us working class, but we're just not working anymore. We're not a working. We're not a working. We're just not working anymore. They used to call us working class.
Welcome, folks, to the December 19th Illinois World Labor Hour edition here on WAFT, listener-supported and worker-supported radio in East Central Illinois and webcasting worldwide at WEFT.org. The views and opinions here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of West Board of Directors, the station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated. So now we're going to be having Tom's usual poem in the cultural corner. This week's poem is titled The Foreclosure. And now we'll have some underwriting new information, and then we'll get some news stories. Tom?
The Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by the Illinois Education Association Teachers Union and the Central Illinois Jobs with Justice. Building coalitions amongst workers, unions, and the community, the Illinois Education Association and the Central Illinois Jobs with Justice are proud to support WEFT Community Radio in East Central Illinois. This hour of programming is also brought to you by the listeners of WEFT and by the Brotherhood of Maintenance Way. The Brotherhood of Maintenance Way employees are proud to continue their support for the Illinois World Labor Hour. A Democratic Union BMWE celebrates the voice for labor on WEFT. It is our hope that all workers may share the same benefits that they enjoy, such as living wages, job security, away-from-home expense pay, early retirement, Canadian-style health insurance, and guaranteed year-round work. And the Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois.
Okay, thank you, Tom. And now we'll go to some workers' info here for news stories. And we can start with Tom.
Hold on,
just a minute. Hold on, Bill. Stop the press, so to speak.
Yeah, this is something I want to get right on. Jim Iman brought this up the other day. And that is this Facebook thing. Okay. Actually, I've been using Facebook to communicate with members of the audience. However, I must realize that not all members of the audience may be familiar with Facebook at all. And here's how you can – and so one thing I will also do is try and monitor my email address, which is laborhour@yahoo.com, laborhour@yahoo.com. I actually created it for this show, but it became my personal account really quickly. Now, on the Facebook thing, what you need to do is go to Facebook.com, and then you can set up a Facebook account, and then what you would do would be search for Bill Gorell, and that's G-O-R-R-E-L-L. Find me and send me a friend request. When you find my profile, there will be a kind of widget weird some things up there towards the top in the middle of the page that will say friend request, and then I become your friend, and it's hard to explain how Facebook interacts, but you'll get used to it eventually and probably get addicted to it. So anyway, thank you.
Okay,
and WEFT is also on Facebook. under WEFT Radio. I think the best way to do is to...
That just happened recently, right?
Right. Two separate words, WEFT Radio. And I think we've got a Twitter account, too, which is WEFT Radio, all one word.
Okay. So. All right, very good. All right, Tom?
This in from the Associated Press in Washington, D.C., Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are suspending foreclosures and evictions for about 2 weeks and a temporary break for borrowers during the holiday season.
Yahoo!
The suspension, which was announced Thursday by the government-controlled companies, begins today, the 19th of December, and will carry on until January 3rd, 2010. In a statement announcing the plan, Fannie Mae's CEO, Michael Williams, said, "No family should have to face the prospect of being evicted during the holiday season." Earlier on Thursday, Citigroup Incorporated announced a 30-day suspension for foreclosures and evictions affecting some 4,000 borrowers. Fannie and Freddie would not estimate how many homeowners would get their grace period. Last winter, most major lenders suspended foreclosures while the Obama administration developed its $75 billion loan modification program. However, foreclosures and evictions picked up again after those suspensions were lifted, and it's pretty certain that's exactly what's going to happen again. Bob?
Okay, I got a story here out of the UK. The High Court in Britain denies British Airways cabin crews the right to strike, but Unite, which is the union there, is determined to re-ballot. On Thursday, the High Court has not upheld the union's ballot of more than 12,000 cabin crew members. Unite Joint General Secretaries Derek Simpson and Tony Woodley says, "While we have never wanted this dispute, it is a disgraceful day for democracy when a court can overrule such an overwhelming decision by employees taken in a secret ballot." Apparently, in that ballot, came out about 92% in favor of the strike action, and they had an 80% turnout. And the reason that the High Court denied it was because apparently about 900 of those people that voted in that ballot were either retirees or were laid off and not going to be able to work during the strike time. So they determined that those 900 voided the entire ballot because they said they shouldn't be allowed to vote in this strike.
Well, that's questionable because they could be called back in a future time. And if they're...
They could be.
Yeah.
This goes back to a court case, I guess, a couple of years ago in Britain involving a Metro bus court strike.
Okay.
And they ruled the same thing. Apparently, Britain's courts are determining that if you have employees that are either retired or laid off during the time that the strike will be going on, they're determining that they have no say in the matter anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to have to re-ballot and only count the people that are working for the union at the present time.
Okay, we'll have to stay tuned to that and see how that develops. The U.S. military has launched an attack on rebels in Yemen. American cruise missiles struck targets across Yemen on Thursday. U.S. fighter aircraft also dropped bombs on Yemen. A few days ago, Obama sent special forces troops to Yemen to assist government troops in their war against the rebels. Iranian media said the U.S. started bombing Yemen on Monday. Saudi Arabia has also been attacking the rebels with ground troops and airstrikes, including chemical weapons, which include phosphorus bombs. After the rebels, who are allegedly linked to al-Qaeda, according to the U.S. media, defeated Yemeni and Saudi troops earlier this month, thousands of troops from Jordan and Morocco were also sent to Yemen. Iran has sent warships to the waters off Yemen as well. And kind of in a related story, I mean, this really kind of shocked me, as if there's not enough going on in Iraq and especially Afghanistan now. They're going to be adding Yemen to the mix here. Dennis Kucinich on December 15th proposed a congressional effort to end the Afghanistan war, and his sponsorship of this bill gained about a dozen bipartisan co-sponsors during the week. List of co-sponsors provided by Kucinich's office included, among some, John Conyers of Michigan, Ron Paul of Texas, Republican, by the way, John Conyers, Democrat. There's a list of other people here, Lynn Woolsey of Democrat of California, Timothy V. Johnson, Republican of Illinois, who's basically our U.S. congressman, has also supported this bill. Raul Grijalva from Democrat of Arizona, and Eric Massa of Democrat of New York. And it says, at a time when 15 million people are unemployed, we cannot continue to spend billions of dollars on a disastrous war, Senator said in a press release. My resolution will focus a debate and vote on the war in Afghanistan. Congress must reassert its constitutional authority to start and end wars. And what's interesting, when this did finally come to the vote, I think it was yesterday, three of the original sponsors of this, John Conyers, Democratic Michigan, Raul Grijalva of Democratic Arizona, and Eric Massa, Democratic New York, voted against it. So here we go. More betrayals from most of the Democrats in the House. But, you know, I really admire Dennis Kucinich, because over the years he walks it like he talks it, and he's, thank God we've got him in the U.S. Congress still.
Cities around the country that have installed energy-efficient traffic lights are discovering hazardous effects. The bulbs don't burn hot enough to melt snow or ice and become crusted over in a storm, a problem blamed for dozens of accidents and at least one death. Many communities have switched to LED bulbs in their traffic lights because they use as much as 90% less energy than the old incandescent bulbs, and they last far longer. However, their great advantage is shadowed by a major drawback. They do not produce the heat to melt the snow and ice covering the lights, so drivers don't know whether it's amber or red or green. Some communities began installing the cool-burning LEDs more than a decade ago, and it wasn't long before drivers started complaining about the problem. Since the complaints began growing in numbers, authorities in several states are studying the problem and are testing possible solutions.
Okay, and I got a story again out of Canada here, but and that's a U.S. United Steelworkers and Vale spar over the picket line and scab threats in the Canadian nickel strike. And with pressures mounting on Brazilian-based Vale to return to bargaining in the Canadian nickel strike now entering its sixth month, the company and the United Steelworkers are fighting battles in the courtroom and before the public in what has become a pitched, bitter dispute between working-class Canadians and a rich, profitable multinational. Canadian management of Vale has also deployed divide-and-conquer tactics by trying to drive a wedge between striking steelworkers, as well as giving the false public perception that its social rollback proposals to USW branch unions are a necessary ingredient to sustainable mining in Canada. Some 3,250 miners and metal workers went on strike at Vale's nickel mining, smelting, and processing operations in Sudbury and Port Colborne, Ontario, on the 13th of July, 2009, while another 350 copper and nickel miners from Goose Bay and Voisey's Bay, Labrador, joined the strike on the 1st of August. Vale, which bought Canada-based Inco's assets late in 2006, is seeking to strip away a production bonus from Canadian steelworkers, impose a two-tiered pension plan, and gain contract language to allow it greater flexibility on using subcontractors, which ultimately jeopardizes job security and the sustainable future of workers themselves. For 10 weeks now, Vale has made threatening moves that it would restart production at its mines and processing facilities in northern Ontario near Sudbury, something never before done in a labor dispute in Sudbury. The company most recently posted notices that it will restart the massive Copper Cliff smelter using a selected contractor. And the union has filed an unfair labor practice with the Ontario Labor Board because Vale insists on using USW Local 2020 members, clerical, admin, and technical workers, to perform mining and processing work. And Local 2020 itself has filed serious safety grievances against Vale for assigning the members work they are not trained for.
That's really discouraging, and you see that all too many times where the bosses can get another union to come in and do work, actual strike-breaking work, and it's just it's obscene. No union should ever do that, ever.
This is actually from the same union and just a different local, and they're switching them into different jobs. That's even worse.
Indeed, indeed.
Yeah.
This is from Richard Meller, a retired member of Ask Me Local 444 in Oakland, California, and this is in response to all the student building occupations that were occurring here in California last month, or beginning of this month, and part of last month, and in fact, we had some of those students on the show here a couple weeks ago. But anyway, he says, I went to my former local tonight, he's a retired member, as the resolution that the executive board passed was coming up as regards to the students. And also all the cutbacks by the state of California and raising of tuition by 30%. Anyway, they gave me time to give a report on the students' activity, which I did. There's a tremendous amount of sympathy with the students, as many of my former coworkers have kids in college, in school or college. The membership passed the resolution. I am including it here on a letterhead so you can print it out. I also made copies of the national call from this committee, the California Coordinating Committee, and urged the members to endorse, explain that, like the resolution, it does not simply ask for the leaders of organized labor to endorse what the students are doing, but to join it and build for it and mobilize their members to make it successful. I explained that the Los Angeles Labor Federation alone has 800,000 members and that 2 million of us are organized throughout the state. This power must be mobilized if we are to drive back this offensive of corporate America. This committee's resolutions will be taken up under new business, so the press will, president will let me know how it went in a little while here. So stay tuned, but if you want, we'll keep you posted on this information. But Richard is urging everyone to who's a member of a union to try to take this to your local union and try to get it passed as far as support.
ExxonMobil, the world's largest publicly traded company, is making a $29 billion bet that pressure to curb climate change will mean that natural gas, cleaner than coal and currently much easier to reach, will become a crucial source of power for the United States. Exxon agreed to buy XTO Energy in an all-stock deal at a 25% premium, indicating how eagerly a company that is among the most conservative in a conservative industry is jumping into the market for natural gas. As negotiators haggled in Copenhagen over the global plan to curb carbon emissions, the deal suggests that Exxon sees a change coming for an energy source best known now for heating homes. The deal is also the largest for the U.S. energy sector in at least 4 years, and Exxon's biggest acquisition since it bought the Mobil Corporation for $75 billion in 1999. Climate legislation is making it necessary for utility companies to aggressively seek new fuels like natural gas to minimize the economic hit. XTO claims about 45 trillion cubic feet of gas, much of it trapped in tight shale formations. The technologies developed over the past decade have made it much cheaper and easier to extract the natural gas from these formations.
Okay, unemployment news came out yesterday, and unemployment rates dropped in 36 states and the District of Columbia, but that trend appeared to reflect more people leaving the workforce. Unemployed people who stop looking for jobs out of frustration aren't counted in the labor force. Friday's Labor Department report underscored that employers have yet to ramp up hiring, and many Americans can't find work. The number of people jobless for at least 6 months rose last month to 5.9 million, according to a separate report released earlier this month. And the average length of unemployment exceeds 28 weeks, the longest on records dating back to 1948. It was the first time since April that more states' unemployment rates fell than rose, but two states, South Carolina and Florida, saw joblessness reach its highest point in 25 years, and economists say most states' unemployment rates will rise as the stimulus programs wind down and seasonal jobs taper off.
Okay, Bob. We have a request from a listener to play Brother Can You Spare a Dime, and Bill Gorell's going out into our library to see if we can find it. However, it's a little problematic in the sense that there are several versions of that song, and Bob and I both have that, actually several versions of it at home. There's one by Bing Crosby, which is my favorite version, and there's also some by Rudy Valley, and I can't remember who else.
I think Bing Crosby's the one I have.
Yeah, so if we can't find it here, I will definitely, I'm making a note here that I'll bring it for our next show on Saturday. It'll be our end of the year show, in which we're going to be doing a retrospective and the top stories of the year, and also we have plans to play a good amount of labor music. So if we can't find it here today, we will definitely bring it in for next Saturday's show. Okay, Tom, finally this news story. Governor Jim Doyle of Wisconsin made it official Thursday, December 10th. He signed into law AB 172, the Labor History in the Schools Bill, culminating 12 years of efforts by key legislators, workers, unions, and others to pass legislation to assure the teaching of labor history and collective bargaining. More than 50 persons crowded into the governor's conference room as he used four pins to sign historic bill that will make the teaching of labor history and collective bargaining part of the state standards for public schools in Wisconsin. Once again, Wisconsin leads the way in progressive labor legislation, commented Steve Kerpley, president of the Wisconsin Labor History Society. As far as we can tell, Wisconsin is the first state to have enacted such a law. Well, I do know that Illinois has a law requiring teaching of labor history in the books, which I think was passed back in the 1930s or 40s. However, it's not being enforced. This kind of reminded me, I think maybe some people here in the education community need to start pushing that enforcement here. So
find out why.
And find out why, exactly. But I'm just glad to see Wisconsin, at least another state besides Illinois, that has that requirement. Okay, we're going to go to a little workers' independent news, and then we'll be right back.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The AFL-CIO says the watered-down Senate health care reform bill is inadequate and substantial changes have to be made in it. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says the bill has been hijacked by defenders of the insurance industry. He says the AFL-CIO will fight for genuine health care reform that includes a public option to break the stranglehold insurance companies have over consumers. Trumka says the House bill is the model for genuine reform, and working people cannot accept anything less than genuine reform. United Steelworkers President Leo Girard says his union isn't giving up on getting health care reform for working people that really matters. He told MSNBC's Ed Schultz he's mad as hell at the insurance company Democrats trying to gut the reform by removing the public option.
I'm angry at what I call the insurance company Democrats, and we've got more than Joe Lieberman. Joe Lieberman is now at the corner of it, but just a few days ago it was Ben Nelson. Before that it was Blanche Lincoln. The House has got a good bill. Hopefully it's going to have to go to committee. We're going to fight like crazy to make sure that we get a good bill out. I'm not prepared to give up.
Unemployment in Detroit is at nightmarish levels. Officially, it's 27%. But Detroit Mayor Dave Bing says the real joblessness among Detroit workers is closer to 50%. According to the 2008 U.S. Census, an estimated 48.5% of Detroit men between 20 and 64 didn't have jobs. In South Los Angeles, students at Fremont High pledged to fight the closure of their school due to below-average standardized test scores. Leilani Albano has more.
Dozens of students, teachers, and union members held a rally at Fremont High School in response to last week's announcement by LAUSD Superintendent Ramon Cortinez, who says the school district will reconstitute the school or shut it down and start it up again from scratch. The school district plans to reconstitute other low-performing schools that do not turn things around. This marks the first time that the controversial measure has been adopted by LA Public Schools.
Cortinez is going about it the wrong way. I understand he wants change and it's time for change, but you can go about it a different way.
That's senior Shakara Grimes. Fremont has made improvements in recent years, including boosting student test scores. Union officials say Fremont administrators also added small learning communities that have helped to personalize relationships between students and staff. UTLA officer Betty Forrester says reconstitution will disrupt the progress made at the school.
When you start and wipe out everything that has been built and try to knock it all down and start over, we don't believe that's the way to go. The way to go is to support what's working at the school site.
Despite the increased student scores, the superintendent says it isn't enough to avert a takeover. District officials plan to make the changes within 6 months. For Workers Independent News, I'm Leilani Albano in Los Angeles.
Doug Cunningham, Workers Independent News.
Okay, we're back, and it seems like there's a lot going on here in labor, including health care and everything, which I think I'd like to comment about later on. But first, I wanted to let the listeners know that the Labor Hour received this letter and a book and a CD in the mail the other day. It says, "Dear David, workplace conditions in many industries are getting steadily and worse. Mandatory overtime, speed-ups, electronic monitoring, stolen wages, no sick leave, union busting, health and safety hazards, job insecurity, and extreme workplace stress from understaffing are all becoming more common." Labor studies professor Tom Juravich open your listeners' eyes to outrageous injustice happening in four U.S. industries. He will connect this overall pattern of deterioration across the U.S. labor market to how economic stimulus plans do and don't benefit working people. What's interesting is, along with this letter, I received a book by Tom Jarovich, as well as a CD. I guess this guy is also a musician and songwriter. So we're going to play one of his songs here. The title of the CD is Altar of the Bottom Line, and we're going to play the title track of that song here. And I'm definitely going to be getting a hold here of Tom and see if he can come on the Labor Hour, call in, and so we can interview him here in the near future. So in the meantime, here is the title track off Tom Jarovich's CD, Altar of the Bottom Line.
I grew up at a time when a man could make his own fate by the sweat of his brow, by the work he'd do, by what his hands could make. Now my life hangs in the balance, deals brokered, made in sand. Far from this town, my fate is sealed at the altar of the bottom line. I should have seen it coming. How was I supposed to know? Record production coming out of the plant, past 3 years in a row. And they bought that place in New Hampshire, wasn't much of a find. What are we workers supposed to know about the altar of the bottom line? Though their debt kept rising, still they were not afraid. They built a series of overseas plants using the machines we made. But as greed had blinded all reason, startup fell way behind time. But next quarter, they'd have to ante up at the altar of the bottom line. It fell into chapter 11. There's not much more they could do. Couple of top brass, they lost their jobs, but we all lost ours too. Though we'd always made money, it was the way to buy time. They shut us down, raised the cash for the altar of the bottom line.
Okay, that was labor history professor Tom Jarovich, who we're going to be getting on the as a guest, call-in guest on the Labor Hour here coming right after the first of the year. And in the meantime, we now want to go to that portion of the program, the Cultural Corner, with Tom Thomas's poem of the week, The Foreclosure.
Standing empty by the roadside, a tearfully sad sight to see, the old house sheltered life so long, but now it's locked by banker's key. There'll be no more summer cookouts or gatherings of friends and kin. No more fireworks on the 4th. The bankers brought that to an end. No Christmas lights in the window. No tree with a star at the crest. Just a sad, dark, empty old house, deeply embraced by loneliness. The happy barking of the dogs as they ran and played in the yard is something that old house must miss. The silence must be very hard. If a house could have memories, then it would have to have a heart wherein to store those memories and from them never have to part. Capitalism's sad victim is standing dark and empty now, not sheltering as meant to do, but empty as a banker's vow. It's time to bring those bankers to realization of what's right, for there are too many houses where no family sleeps at night. We as a people together, a new banking system should start, and then we'll never have to see any house with a broken heart. The foreclosure was written at the Poets Loft in Champaign, Illinois on December 16, 2009, and was first recited live December 19, 2009 on the Illinois World Labor Hour on WEFT 90.1 FM in Champaign, community radio for East Central Illinois.
Okay, thank you, Tom. And I got one public service announcement here. Tired of having no voice and no power? Join the club. So what do we do? We organize. We speak out and represent ourselves. We connect workers and their families to available resources, and we demand more. More importantly, we work together for better solutions for our community. All around the country, people are organizing to fight back and represent themselves because they know as we do that, the fat cats on Wall Street and the politicians in Washington and Springfield are not going to rescue us. We work with unions, churches, and other community groups, community activists, and people who have never joined anything before to demand a bailout for Main Street, not Wall Street, to demand jobs, job creation, and job training, unemployment and other assistance, and health care for all of our families. What does it cost? Nothing but your time and effort. Who's in charge? You and others like you. Who pays for this? Mostly you, a sweat equity. Central Illinois Jobs with Justice, the Illinois Disciples Foundation, and the AFL-CIO also make this happen by providing meeting space and central context. And why are unions doing this? Union members are losing their jobs too, but even more, people with no voice are losing work. This disaster affects all workers, employed or not, union or not, all races, creeds, and sexes. We are all in this together. And can other unemployed people join? Sure. Bring your friends, family, and neighbors. Sounds great. Where do I sign? Just fill in a Working America card, or we'll sign you up and give you a card and let you know about the meetings. You can find out more information about this at area code 217-469-6111, area code 217-469-6111. And, of course, that's being sponsored by National Jobs with Justice.
Yeah, I wanted to mention that there is a fundraiser tonight. The Friends of Kevin Flowers are having the fundraiser Saturday night at 8 o'clock. It's going to be at the UC Independent Media Center, which is the old post office in downtown Urbana. And Candy Foster and Shades of Blue will be there. And they're asking musicians to bring their instruments, sit in and play. They'll be jamming later on. This is to help Kevin. He's got some medical problems, medical treatment. He's going through from cancer and stuff like that. And so that's this evening at the Independent Media Center at 8 o'clock. And should be a good time. A lot of local musicians are going to show up there, besides Candy Foster and Shades of Blue.
Okay, thanks, Bob. And also I want to remind our listeners of Labor's View TV every Sunday from 4 to 5 p.m. Tune in this Sunday at 4 o'clock, and you will see a program about the Illinois World Labor Hour with fellow worker Bill Gorell and fellow worker Tom Thomas. And we talked about a lot of issues besides the show. It was really good. Tom read several of his poems, and I think you'll like it. Tune in and in regards to that, there was a song I've been meaning to play here on the Labor Hour for quite some time. And this song is by Steve Earle, and it's called The Hometown Blues. And every time I hear this song, I think it's just the perfect theme song for Tom Thomas. So I'm going to play this right now for you.
But for better or worse, it is the Hometown Blues, with apologies to Thomas Wolfe and Doc Watson. One, two, three. Ladies and gentlemen, notice at no time do my fingers ever leave my hands. I wish I'd never come back home. It don't feel right since I've been grown. I can't find any of my old friends hang around. I want nothing to bring you down like your hometown. I spent some time in New Orleans. I had to live on rice and beans. Texas when the sun was beating down. I want nothing to heart lies in broken pieces scattered along the way. So don't think about me when I'm gone. I know my traveling along. You are the sweetest little thing I've ever found. I want nothing. Bring it down like your hometown. I do some kicking.
Okay, that was Hometown Blues by Steve Earle, a.k.a. Tom Thomas's theme song here. You've done all those things. Eaten, lived on rice and beans in New Orleans, hitched through Texas when the sun was burning down. And,
oh, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, I think we're going to just kind of, since this is kind of a holiday show, it's a show before Christmas, we're just going to kind of let it go kind of freestyle here, if you will, and just kind of do some round robin, just... little information, a little discussion, banner, whatever. But I guess I'll start off. There was this article by Glenn Greenwald in Salon.com this week, and it's entitled White House as Helpless Victim on Healthcare. And what the article, the gist of the article is that the White House, in other words, the Obama administration and Barack Obama in particular, are nothing that can be farther from the fact that they're a helpless victim. But anyway, just a few excerpts from this article. It starts out, of all the posts I wrote this year, the one that produced the most vicious email backlash easily was this one from August, which examined the substantial evidence showing that contrary to Obama's occasional public statements in support of a public option for health care, the White House clearly intended from the start that the final health care reform bill would contain no such provision and was actively and privately participating in efforts to shape a bill without it. And he goes on to say, I guess everything that's been happening since August, we've been seeing more and more of that. It's like one email I got the other day titled in regards to this final health care bill proposal, here you can have a piece of candy, but I'm going to take the candy and all you get's the wrapper. Well, on second thought, give me back the wrapper too. I mean, this is kind of the I think characterizes just this kind of supposed reform, healthcare reform bill. But anyway, I guess, some Democrats, and I want to stress the word some, is definitely not enough, but Russ Feingold, Senator, Democratic Senator in Wisconsin, are among some of those who have been vocal supporters of a real healthcare bill. He's getting pretty angry about this, and he stated that it's unfair to really blame Lieberman to try to say that he's one man solely responsible for derailing this. Feingold said that the responsibility ultimately rests with Barack Obama, and he could, and Barack Obama's president could insisted on a higher standard for this legislation. legislation. He says, this appears to be legislation the president won in the first place, so I don't think focusing on Lieberman really tells the truth, said Feingold. I think they could have been higher. I certainly think a stronger bill would have been better in every respect. He says this bill appears to be legislation that the president won in the first place. And he said, if you're interested in preserving and all the things equal, it's better to have a bill. Basically, he's saying that the Obama administration's attitude, it's better to have the pharmaceutical and the health insurance industry on your side than perhaps, you know, than to have them against you. You know, constantly worrying about getting those campaign contributions, evidently, for reelection. And he says the wisdom of that rationale could be debated, but he says the, it's important, progressive victim here of Bob, do you want to make a comment on this?
Yeah, I've got some notes here, some quotes from a couple union officials. SEIU President Andy Stern scolded Obama, saying the president should remember his campaign promise to bring change to America. And AFL-CIO President Richard Trumka said the Senate bill bends towards the insurance industry. Both union chiefs said that they hope the bill that ultimately emerges from Congress will reflect the House-passed measure, which incorporates a government insurance option and omits the insurance tax. The House bill is the model for genuine reform, Trumka said. Working people cannot accept anything less than real reform. And he goes on to say, President Obama must remember his own words from the campaign. Well, this is Andy Stern wrote in a letter posted on the union's website. His call of yes, we can was not just to us, not just to the millions of people who voted for him, but to himself. Our challenge to the president, to the Senate, and to the House of Representatives is to fight, Stern continued. Now more than ever, all of us must stand up and fight like hell to deliver real and meaningful reform to the American people.
So. Yes, indeed. I mean, and you think about all the money that the unions gave Obama, and beyond the money, I mean, the hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of volunteer hours that were donated by rank and file union members.
Phone calls and stuff.
Oh, absolutely. Door to door, especially in these key states like that were not certain of going for Obama, like Indiana, Ohio, West Virginia, Virginia. And he says, here I got the figure, $400 million was given by organized labor to Barack Obama's presidential campaign. Yeah. $400 million.
Howard Dean came out this
yes,
week.
Yes, indeed.
And he said scrap the entire bill. He said he'd vote against it, the Senate bill as it stands.
Yes.
And Howard Dean is a doctor.
Oh, that's right. He is, isn't he? He's a medical doctor.
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
Yes. And, you know, of course, Dennis Kucinich is opposed to this and everything, but it's really interesting. Yes, part of his article here, I had to kind of jump down to the end here. He says, Glenn Greenwald says, over at Politico, Jane Hampshire documents how Joe Lieberman's conduct on the health care bill provides the perfect vehicle or cover, if you will, to advance the agenda of the White House and Harry Reid. Consistent with that, she independently notes media reports that White House officials are privately expressing extreme irritation with Howard Dean for opposing the Senate bill as insufficient, but have had nothing bad to say about Lieberman. Imagine that. Okay.
Here's some quotes from Howard Dean. He says, if I were a senator, I would not vote for the current health care bill. Dean wrote that in an opinion piece published Thursday by the Washington Post. He says, the winners in this bill are insurance companies. The American taxpayer is about to be fleeced in a situation that dwarfs even what happened at AIG. The insurance industry opposes the legislation. So, and then, like you say, top administration officials are firing back at Howard Dean.
Yeah, and it also says that in this article that those Democrats, those few Democrats that are actually saying they're not going to vote for this bill and speaking out about it, says the White House is playing hardball with Democrats who intend to vote against the supplemental war spending bill. I'm sorry, excuse me. But still, they're playing hardball and threatening freshman congressmen in the Democratic Party if they don't toe the line here. So, you know, this is the, as usual, it's, you know, the Obama public image versus the Obama truth behind that's working behind the scenes. You know, it's like the classic Actions speak louder than words, as my grandmother used to say. And, I mean, we can see this with the Obama administration. And, you know, I've been seeing a lot of emails in the last week in particular about how Obama's, you know, organized labor, rank and file anyway, and a lot of the progressive community's support for Obama is hemorrhaging really, really bad. And how he expects to get reelected when people see the betrayal that's happened. I mean, basically, there's been nothing changed from George Bush. I mean, it's the same people run the show behind the scenes. Not one substantial thing has changed since the election of Barack Obama. The same policies are being continued and, in fact, expanded. The war, health care. I mean, go on and on. Even going after some lawsuits, going after some of these Bush administration lawyers who basically wrote the main and the policy for illegal renditions, kidnapping, and torture. I mean, they're war criminals. The Obama administration is even blocking lawsuits trying to get at these people and even banning, just like the Bush administration did, photographs of dead American soldiers coming back. I mean, even little things like that, they're doing the same identical thing that the Bush administration was doing. So, I mean, I thought we had an election in this country, but it seems like the same people are running the show, the same policies, you know?
Same big corporate interests.
Well, indeed.
The same lobbyist.
Yep. You know? Yep, and that's really, you want to get to the real bottom line problem here with this country as far as our crisis of democracy, as you will, is corporate money. Corporate money controlling our government because you can't, it's basically a system of legalized bribery. If anyone wants to get elected to any office beyond state representative, and heck, there are even some larger cities to get elected to mayor or city council, you got to have corporate money because of, but you know, here locally in Champaign-Urbana, that's not the case because we're small, you know, but boy, you want to run for U.S. Congress or Senate, or especially the President of the United States, and you know, you got to have big time money to buy all those television and radio ads, or your opponent will just blow you out of the water as far as name recognition. If you don't get your name out there and your issues out there, nobody's going to know you exist. And this is the problem. I mean, it's a whole interconnected system here that is causing this problem we have, where the people no longer control their government. It's actually the corporate interests, because you know, in most democracies in the world, or especially in Western Europe, it's illegal to give any kind of contribution to a political candidate running for office. And on top of that, anybody running for political office, regardless of what party they're from or whatever, they've got to have, they're required by law that the media has to give them equal access time. And usually the form that takes is panel discussions and debate formats in which all the candidates are present. And all candidates get the same amount of exposure on the media, and that's how it should be. Not to mention the fact that also in Western Europe they have elections on Sundays when most people don't work, and that you're automatically a voter when you turn 18 just by default. No having to go try to get over to the courthouse during working hours on work days when the only time it's open. So, yes.
In our country, the corporate media decides who's going to even get in the debates, like the presidential debates.
Exactly. You know? That's a very good point. Look what happened last time.
You know, you have eight people running on the Democratic Party, and they say, well, we're only going to let three people in the debate. You
yes.
know? Same thing on the Republican side.
Yes, indeed.
In the presidential election. They whittled it down to the two or three that they thought were legitimate.
That they wanted. Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. On their end.
Yes. Know? And the same thing happened with Dennis. The primary victim of that was Dennis Kucinich in the Democratic
and
side.
Ron Paul
on the Republican
side. And those are the two people that have some different ideas and are presenting some different opinions out there.
Indeed.
You know? And they won't even let them into debate.
Right. And it's interesting, is even though they have their differences, Dennis Kucinich and Ron Paul agree on several issues, one of them being the end of the wars and occupations, right. Iraq, Afghanistan, ending repealing NAFTA and other corporate trade treaties, and also regaining our Constitution back, eliminating the Patriot Act, just getting back power to the people, so to speak.
Ron Paul wants to do away with the Federal Reserve.
Indeed. In fact, Dennis Kucinich is supportive of that as well. I mean, it's really interesting how many similarities they have, even though they do have differences and everything. As I think Carl Easterbrook said, I like that quote, that if it was the people who decided who were going to be our presidential candidates from the Democratic Republican Party in the national election, as opposed to the corporations and their corporate media, instead of Barack Obama and John McCain, it would have been Dennis Kucinich and Ron Paul.
Yeah.
you know, so. But anyway, Bill, what do you think of a lot of this that's going on? I mean, not just about health care, but I know your focus of anger, and rightly so, have been these banks.
Well, yeah, I'm very upset with them, partly because I owe them a lot of money, and I'm not making any money right now because of the way they screwed everything up. You know, it was bad enough they sucked people like me in with their credit cards, and they destroyed the housing industry by sucking people in. And, you know, with ridiculous loans, and people are blaming the people who borrowed the money, but right. My God, right. Man.
You got bankers that are pretty much just criminals out there. They knew what they were doing. They were giving money to people that they knew would never pay them back, you know. So.
And I'm really upset, too, about we have all of these things that are converging disasters, such as global warming and the economy. And one way to help fix the economy is by really getting into fixing the environment.
Indeed.
Green jobs.
Yeah, what happened to all those green jobs?
Yeah, I guess they went with Van Jones.
Van Jones.
Yeah, who was beat to death by Glenn Beck.
Yeah, yes. Which the Obama administration let happen. I mean,
these Democrats, they just lay down. The Republicans, I mean, look, they got people like Vitter, who is caught with prostitutes, does not, I don't even think he's apologized or anything. And then that guy that said he was out on the
hiking trip.
Yeah, the hiking trip, and he is in Brazil.
With
his girlfriend, and he hasn't resigned.
Yeah.
Well,
his wife
left him.
And he abandoned his post as governor of that state. What if there would have been a natural disaster?
Like Hurricane Katrina or something, yes.
That's because everybody's concerned about Tiger Woods and fooling with.
You know, that's going back to the media again, and that's why, you know, we've got programs like the Labor Hour here on a community radio station like WFT, is the fact that that's the problem. That's a big part of the problem is the corporate media. The corporations have a media. The people of this country need a media, and really one of the few places you're going to find that is on community radio and television stations, which...
Well, people do have a media. It's just that not enough of the people out there actually use the media.
Well, that's a good point, Tom. It really is. But, I mean, this is, like Bob was pointing out, this is the tactic of the corporate media. Not only do they not report all the news that's happening around the world that's really relevant. They distort. They at times lie. They exclude information. And then on top of that, they have everything from Tiger Woods, what's going on in his life, what tattoo Britney Spears got today. I mean, all this distracting crap. And that's exactly what it's intended for, is to distract people, to muddle up their minds so that they it's like information overload in this stuff. And it's to keep them, you know, distracted and to keep them unfocused from issues that are truly, really affecting their lives. But, Bill, I'm going to have to disagree with you a little bit on this congressman and this governor. You know, that's really, whether or not, I mean, most countries in the world, prostitution's legal and, you know, really.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I'm talking about in our context and the Republican Party, which is always on the family values and gay bashing.
Indeed, exactly. But, you know, the thing is, that's between them and their wives. But, you know, what I'm really angry about, talk about criminals, is these people that have just, you know, have actually, you know, like you said, you know, you went so far as to call them, you know, committed treason, as far as basically just, you know, with the bank bailout and everything and causing all the suffering. I mean, and the banks the people that caused the crisis, they're the ones that they're profiting. They profited from it, you know. Meanwhile, people are losing their homes. And, you know, these people, I mean, they're criminals, and they should go to jail. But they're not going to jail. They're running the country. Goldman Sachs, in particular. Hank Paulson, Bush's Treasury Secretary, former employee of Goldman Sachs, upper management. Timothy Geithner, Obama's current Treasury Secretary, former employee of Goldman Sachs. You know, and it's, I think it goes back even farther than that, to Clinton administration. I think Robert Rubin and Larry Summers, I think they both worked for Goldman Sachs. And, Bill, you're the first person that pointed that out to me, actually, about this Goldman Sachs connection.
Goldman Sachs gave Obama, Goldman Sachs and their employees gave Obama about $1 million before he was ever elected.
Before he was even elected, because I know
campaign contribution.
Okay, because I heard that by the end of this last election, that Goldman Sachs gave Obama $12 million and John McCain $10 million. I mean, you talk about hedging your bets. I mean, and this is exactly what's going on here, folks. Is that the corporate interests donate to both both candidates of both political parties, because they, no matter which one wins, they're going to win. And unfortunately, in the same dynamic, no matter which one wins, we lose again and again and again. I mean, I'm getting tired of this broken record. And every year, you know, especially during the presidential election years, these whiny liberals start talking about spoilers, spoilers, spoilers. Well, we don't have a two-party system. We have two wings of a one-party system. It's time that we got at least a second party here that's a real people's party.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's pretty much, except for a very few people, like, oh my gosh, I can't remember. We were just talking about him, Dennis Kucinich.
Yes,
that, you know, are completely bought out, and the senator from Illinois, whose name is escaping me now. Man, I'm getting old.
Dick Durbin.
I mean, he came out and said it. He came out and said that Congress is owned by the banks. You know, so maybe so. He's usually been a pretty good one, too.
He's not bad. I mean, I've had some differences with him, but in general, he's not bad.
And I am so sad that Marcy Kaptur did not get to be Speaker of the House, because
yes,
she ran against Pelosi. And I thought that Marcy Kaptur was fantastic in Capitalism by Michael Moore.
Yes, and she's been in she was in the U.S. Congress. She has more seniority than Pelosi, I believe.
Yeah.
And so she should have deserved it. But you think the corporate interest wanted that? Oh, are you kidding?
And another one out of Capitalism, another woman that I fell in love with, was Elizabeth Warren, who yes, is like the watchdog over the TARP plans, I believe.
Yeah, she keeps her eye on things like that. I always like to catch her if she's on interviews and stuff. She's,
mm-hmm,
she's really good.
But you were talking about the news, and I've mentioned this before, is that there is plenty of labor news out there, and they don't have to talk about Tiger Woods' 20th girlfriend, because if you go to L-A-B-O-U-R Start, laborstart.com, is that org or net?
It's
org, I
believe. .org, yes.
Yeah, if you go there, you will find pages and pages and pages and pages of labor stories.
I hate to admit it, but I get half of my news stories off of Labor Start every week.
That's nothing to be ashamed of there.
Well, they get their news from everywhere else. I mean, uh-huh, it's a news aggregated website is what it is.
It's
it
excellent.
Goes to the...
Yes.
There's people all over the world linking articles.
All over the world. It's amazing. You can go down the list, and there's stories from Zimbabwe and Thailand and, you know,
all corners of the world. Okay.
Oh, guess what?
There's people on strike somewhere.
And there's things going on in Israel besides the deal with the Palestinians. There are labor struggles within Israel and the Palestinian communities.
Yeah, good point, Bill. Yes. Yes, and one thing you can do, of course, is to help support your people's media, alternative media out there, by wherever you live, wherever you're listening to. There's usually a community radio station somewhere nearby. Please support them. Likewise, if you live in this area, you know, just help keep us on the air here at WFT.
Oh, by the way, Neil Parthen writes, and he has a sports show on WRFU on at 2 o'clock this afternoon.
Every Saturday, right? 2 o'clock.
Right. Mm-hmm. He says Tiger only has 11 girlfriends.
Oh, well, okay. Thank you, Neil, for pointing that out. And so we're going to leave you with a little Utah Phillips. And this song is called Why Come? And tune in next week for the Illinois World Labor Hour. We're going to be having a retrospective of some of the top stories of the year and playing a bunch of good labor music. So thanks for tuning in.
Miller kept the Senior Citizen Center for a long time up there in Seattle, Washington. Jack had spent most of his life in the forest as a logger or timber beast, they called him in those days, because you were treated like an animal. There were no bunk houses. He recalled sleeping on the ground with his fellow workers with their wet clothes from the rainforest piled in a heap next to the fire, hoping that they would be dry by the time to go to work the next day. Spoke many different languages in the forest, and they could hardly talk to each other. It was just like Lawrence. He said most of them had never been to school. Most of them couldn't read or write. Jack Miller could remember the Verona. There was a shingle weaver strike up at Everett, Washington. It's called the Everett Massacre. It's another one of those that didn't make it into the history books. The Wobblies, they chartered a steam launch called the Verona. And they had it sailed up there to Everett, bringing strike relief. And as the boat sailed into the pier, Sheriff McRae had ringed the whole pier with armed deputies. He just deputized every drunk in every bar in town and put a rifle in their hand. Well, they surrounded the boat.